Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Today on Edgewise, our guest is Jonathan L.S. Burns, senior lecturer at MIT. He's author of the new book, The Islands of Profit in a Sea of Red Ink. Welcome to Edgewise, Jonathan.
Thank you for the privilege.
Jonathan, your book's got a great title.
Thank you very much, Dave.
So what's behind that?
The original source of it was work that I was doing for 9X here in New York. Probably 15 or so years ago, we took a look at the company's profitability. And it really did look like a few islands in a sea of red ink. Mm-hmm. We thought, of course, we should worry about the red ink. But the more we thought about it, the more we thought that the most important thing was to pay attention to the islands and to make sure those islands were well protected.
Right.
What you want to do, number one, is secure your good business, the 20 to 30% that's giving you all your profits and subsidizing the losses. And then you want to pay attention to ways to turn around the mediocre or red ink.
In the book, you make a statement that every company has a core portion of its business that is capable of high levels of sustainable profitability and growth.
Absolutely. In fact, I was on a panel discussion with top officers of Procter & Gamble, Chiquita, and Pepsi.
Okay, so tell us about what happened there.
What they said is they are picking up market share and profitability because they know how to focus their efforts on the portion of the business that will grow and stay very, very profitable. And they don't dilute their efforts across a very broad sea of red ink.
Right.
So the trick is to focus. And this is especially important in today's economy, in which a lot of companies are suffering. When companies look across their entire book of business, they see a few islands and a lot of red ink. So on average, it's so-so. That makes them afraid to invest. The companies that understand how to find those islands that are sustainably profitable and highly growable focus their investments and their product development on those islands, and they get tremendous increases in market share and profitability while their competitors fall farther and farther behind. Hmm. In this economy, it's especially imperative to understand the mechanism of profitability management.
In the book, you also mentioned that 40% of every company is unprofitable.
That's what I've found. The initial work that I did was with the leading laboratory supply company. We found that was true. We then took a look at 9X,
Right. Found
the same thing. And since then, I've done work in steel, food and beverages, high tech, hospital supplies, and even financial services. And all companies I've ever seen look the same. I did a monthly column for Harvard Business School's Working Knowledge for 4 years on profitability management, the topic of the book. I wrote about this phenomenon where 30 to 40% of every business is unprofitable and 20 to 30% is providing all the reported profits.
Right.
I had readership of about 100,000 a month. Nobody disagreed. The real question was, what do I do about it? And that's why I wrote the book. It's a roadmap on how to identify the 40% that's unprofitable and the 20 to 30% that gives you all the profits. And it has very easy steps so that within a year, you can increase your profitability by 30, 40% or more. And it's field tested and proven.
All right. Now, why are so many companies today meeting sales targets but still losing money?
There are a couple of reasons. The first one is that bringing in revenues across the board doesn't do the trick because 40% of those revenues are not profitable. And if the salesperson happens to hit a larger proportion of unprofitable revenues, I've seen many cases in which the more they sell, the less profitable the company is.
Wow.
But the other deeper issue is that companies are managed by budget.
Sure.
And budgets basically are creatures of the company's history. I want to do better than last year. So if a company is 30 to 40% unprofitable and it gets 5% better, it's still hugely unprofitable.
Well, that's true. So Jonathan, can you share with us some other mistakes companies can make?
First and foremost, it's assuming that more revenues equals more profits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was true say 30 or 40 years ago when companies had arm's length relationships with their customers. What's happened in the interim is companies form different relationships with different customers, some very intimate and quite costly and others not at all. And this has led to a situation where in order to maximize profitability, you have to understand the profitability of particular products with particular customers. Our accounting systems, which were developed hundreds of years ago, are not granular enough to do that. But to do it right is not a big effort. It takes 2 people, 4 to 6 weeks with the PC to redo a $10 billion company.
All right, there's another issue, and that's, does the chief financial officer's role need to change in order to achieve profitability?
It absolutely has to change. Chief financial officers need to become chief profitability officers.
Well, why is that?
Well, what else does a chief financial officer do besides balance the cash and make sure the company's profitable? But the fact of the matter is, virtually all companies, if they don't do the granular profit mapping that I describe in the book, look at revenues in one bucket and costs in another bucket. It can be incredibly accurate for financial reporting,
right,
but it doesn't give you the granular view. Even with a terrific-looking, very profitable customer, you'll find 20-plus percent products that are unprofitable. And turning that around is a very, very simple matter if you know what to do.
Exactly. Now, in the book, you point out 4 elements that are important to profitability. Can you talk a little bit about those?
There are 4 building blocks of profitability. The first one is the right information, which I described before. And again, that's a 4 to 6 week exercise with the PC. It is not 4 years of activity-based costing. And it's done at 70% accuracy so that you can figure out what to do quickly, get it done, and then sharpen your pencil in the next round. Second is the right priorities. Most people think that they should focus on turning around the marginal customers. In fact, the most important thing to do is to lock down and secure the best customers, because typically they're being underserved and overcharged if you're doing things on average. And that's a very dangerous situation. If a competitor comes in and takes away those customers, you're really in trouble for a long time. So secure your good business, and then and only then do you move on to the marginal customers. Third, there are several processes for getting sales, marketing, and operations on the same page. And they're typically around defining standard account relationships so that operations can run a streamlined supply chain into the relationships and sales can sell the right relationships.
Right.
One is market mapping and coordination and account development, because if there's going to be an intimate relationship, operations has a major role and should go in with sales at the very beginning.
Right.
Deep relationships are sold on the company's ability to make the customer more profitable. And that's really an operations coordination issue and not a sales issue. And then the final one is compensation. If salespeople are compensated on revenues, which virtually all salespeople are,
yep,
and revenues are not equally profitable, then it stands to reason that the company won't be maximally profitable, even if everybody gets it. Still, the salespeople's job is to work their pay plan. That's what any sales manager will tell you. If the pay plan says revenues are the right thing to do, that's what they do.
Okay, now you've used the term profit mapping. What is that?
Profit mapping is the process of matching costs and revenues to figure out the profitability of specific products in specific accounts.
Right.
It's a very different process from financial accounting. And this is not hard to do. You extract 2 or 3 months of all the order lines that a company sells, 3 of this to this customer, 4 of that to that customer, and put it into a database. Then with a set of fairly simple tables, for example, is the customer near to or far from the warehouse? Is the product fast, slow, or medium moving? Is it sold by telesales or field rep? Mm-hmm. You can do an income statement on every transaction line, every order line. It sounds like an impossible thing to do, but it goes very quickly. You can do it in probably 4 to 6 weeks with decent information.
Right. But how do you test it?
You put it into a database program and you go hunt for profits. You can see which customers are profitable within a profitable customer, which products are and which aren't. And you can also identify the specific cost elements or other issues which will make all the difference between profit and loss in a particular customer.
Hmm.
It may be something as mundane as the order pattern, which most companies never look at. If you have a customer that orders steadily versus a customer that orders 1,000 on one day, nothing for 2 weeks, and 10,000 the next day, there's a huge difference in cost. And yet most companies take that as an assumption when in fact it's just as costly for the customer as it is for the vendor. And it's very easy to work with the customer to do the right thing. I've been in situations where we showed the order pattern to a customer and they've been appalled. They said, we never knew that we were doing that. So the moral of the story is that most of the turnaround things are good for the customer.
Now, this kind of analysis can be done whether you're a huge company or a small one.
Absolutely. The size of the company is not relevant. A five-person company has the same situation that a $10 billion company has. But the five-person company probably has a better ability to turn it around because they don't have to change a lot of elements in the bureaucracy and people are used to coordinating with each other.
So if you're a larger company, what is the advice there?
There are a couple of elements. First, the processes that get sales, marketing, and operations on the same page.
Right.
The second issue is managing at the right level.
Can you explain what you mean by that?
Something I've seen in a lot of companies is people all the way up to senior vice presidents will be looking at the day-to-day operations. What's really critical is that day-to-day operations is the job of the first-line manager under the supervision of a director, which is a mid-level executive. The directors should be coordinating with each other to maximize profitability, the things that I've been talking about. And then the vice presidents are responsible for the company 3 to 5 years from now.
Right. So
companies that get that right, where you don't have everybody at every level looking at today's operations or today's sales statistics, do terrifically well.
In the book, you have this concept of profit levers. Can you explain this concept to us?
Profit levers is a term that I use to describe the elements an executive or a manager has to be able to turn around marginal business. They can be operational levers like the order pattern that I mentioned. There are things in order cycles. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of fairly simple operational things that'll make an enormous difference. There are also very important sales and marketing issues. Mm-hmm. The one thing that you virtually never want to do is raise your price to get more profitable. In fact, if you do it right, in most cases, you can make the customer more profitable, lower your own cost of operations, and reduce your price at the same time. It's the holy grail of management, and it's absolutely doable.
Okay, you suggest that you have to align sales compensation with product profitability to get the right results. What are some of the tips about how to do that?
The objective is not to reduce the salesperson's compensation. You want to increase the compensation by doing the right thing. I've worked with companies, for example, where we have figured out that the highest payoff is taking really good accounts and making them even more profitable. And there you keep the compensation system and you put a bonus on it.
Got it.
Working with the marginal accounts through profit mapping, you can figure out what actions the salesperson has to accomplish. But you can't give salespeople more than two or three objectives. I've been in companies where they've loaded them with a dozen or more and they just don't know what to do. What you want to do is use something as simple as a red, yellow, green ranking for customers on a couple of key things to change in order to make the account more profitable.
Right.
The salespeople are the eyes, ears, and handshake of the company. And you don't want to punish them. You want to put them into action, making things better. And they should be much better off as a result of this.
In your book, you give the story of companies that have done this and have become profitable. Can you share with us one of those stories you tell in the book?
I'd be very happy to do that. The story I would use is the story of Baxter and the creation of vendor-managed inventory.
Okay, go ahead.
Baxter is a hospital supply company in Deerfield, Michigan. They're a very well-known company.
Sure.
Around 20 years ago, they wanted to figure out better ways to relate to the hospitals.
And what happened there?
We went into the hospitals to see what happened to the Baxter products once they hit the loading dock. In the prior situation, a liter of IV solution was, let's call it a dollar, and five-year contracts would go on whether it was 99 cents or $1.01. So it was really commoditized. When we walked through the hospital and saw what happened to the product, it turned out that the landed cost in the patient's arm was $7.
Right.
Of that $6 increment, about half was capturable by coordination. But the hospitals didn't have scale to do things in a way that Baxter could. Mm-hmm. So we created a business to put people into the hospitals and move products right into the patient care areas.
Right.
So three things happened. One, we predicted, and two were absolute surprises. We did predict that we could lower the hospital cost, and we did that.
Mm-hmm.
What happened at the same time is that we lowered our own cost because we now had control over the order pattern and the inventory in the hospitals, and we were able to smooth the order pattern, get the right inventory, and reduce our cost of serving by a lot, by about 30%. And then what happened that blew us away was sales went up by over 35% in the highest penetrated accounts in the country. And I've seen this in industry after industry after industry. Why? Because of the efficiency, because of the profitability on the part of the customer, because of the relationships that develop between the Baxter operations people in the hospital patient care areas and the head nurses.
Right.
When operations people work with operations people, they just simply naturally find better ways to do things and form good relationships. And that drives massive sales increases. That's going on with Procter & Gamble and Walmart and many, many other companies.
Jonathan, any thoughts to wrap this up?
Absolutely. Do a profit map. You'd be astonished at what you see. It'll take two people, probably a senior analyst from finance and maybe a lower level first line manager, maybe from marketing.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take them 4 to 6 weeks with a PC and it'll be obvious what to do.
Right.
4 to 6 weeks with two people and a PC is too much of an investment for potentially a 30 to 40% profit increase within a year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this economy, companies are either moving ahead fast or they're slipping behind fast. And every manager has to look in the mirror and say, which one am I?
We've been speaking to Jonathan L. S. Burns. He's author of the new book, The Islands of Profit in a Sea of Red Ink. Jonathan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Dave.
AMA training courses are now available direct to your desktop. Our virtual seminars deliver the power of AMA training without the travel, without time away from the office, but with the ability to catapult your skill set and career to new heights. For more information, visit amanet.org/virtual-seminars. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.